Welcome to Planet Waves FM. My name is Eric Francis, your host for the next hour or so. Today's edition is for Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. Welcome to our program. And as ever, it is good to be with you. I thought I would do a show today on the first Wednesday of spring. Didn't do a program yesterday, had too much going on, but seemed like it's not really a complete week in my life without getting on the airwaves here and speaking to you via Planet Waves FM. So hi there, and let's see what we have got going on. It's probably going to be a bit of a shorter show than normal. You might think that's awesome. You might think, I wish it were a little bit longer, but I want to convey one idea in particular around the astrology, and that is focusing on the fact of the total eclipse of the moon that happens on the morning, and here at least in the eastern United States, the morning of April 4th, 2015. It's exact at 8.05 a.m., Eastern Daylight Time. So that puts it right around noon in England. Of course, since it's a lunar eclipse happening at noon, the moon's going to be on the other side of the Earth. Looking at this chart in cast for Kingston, it does seem possible that at least a portion of the eclipse will be visible from the eastern United States if weather permits, and that all of it will be visible from the western United States. So basically, it is going to be an eclipse that happens at moonset. Just focusing the astronomy of a lunar eclipse for a moment, since I think it helps to have the kind of natural science level of this stuff in mind so that it doesn't seem so mysterious and strange. And it, of course, all really does come back to natural science. And by that, I mean just your basic, you know, elementary school level astronomy, though I am not confident that they're teaching this in elementary school anymore, though I have to say that I was quite impressed by my occasion to help an eight-year-old friend of mine learn the difference between convection, conduction, and radiation as methods of conveying heat. And so if they're teaching convection, conduction, and radiation, at least to people in, second grade in New Jersey, then maybe they're teaching what an eclipse is. But just as a refresher, a lunar eclipse happens only at the full moon. So a lunar eclipse is a form of a full moon, and typically two of the full moons every year will be lunar eclipses. And they are the two full moons when the sun happens to be near one of the lunar nodes. What is the lunar node? Well, the lunar node tells you when there's going to be an eclipse, when the sun is there. So the lunar nodes in an astrology chart are pretty much synonymous with an eclipse, but that eclipse is only in effect when the sun gets around one of the nodes. Then, of course, the moon soon after comes along, makes a conjunction for a new moon. That's a solar eclipse. One of those just happened last Friday, the total solar eclipse in Pisces, in the very last degree of Pisces, topic of last week's program. And then comes a lunar eclipse on Saturday morning, the 4th. So eclipses tend to come in pairs, first a solar, then a lunar, or first a lunar, then a solar, all depending. You have to study the pattern and, you know, check your ephemeris and see which comes first. And sometimes in rare years, every, you know, several years, I'm not sure how many, 6-7 years, there will be a pair of lunar eclipses surrounding a solar eclipse. And sometimes those are considered weak, stick some quotes around that, lunar eclipses. But I have found that they certainly are not weak. They are interesting. What we have now is a pattern where there was a total eclipse of the sun on the 20th, and there will be then a total eclipse of the moon on the 4th. of April. And that is the one that is coming up. And what that means is that now we are in the phase of time between two eclipses, one solar, one lunar. And that is typically read astrologically, on the most basic level, as a time of transition, a time when there is a kind of a loosening up of the cosmic machinery or of the psychic fields or simply a symbolic representation of something when there is a kind of sensation of acceleration. And that acceleration is a property that is typical of eclipses as a general class of events where there are these rapid movements or transitions or things seem faded or karmic, or there's a kind of a catch-up moment where things that were long overdue happen. And then that phase of time between eclipses, which is a typical thing, there's pairs of eclipses that happen. So then, given that, there's this two-week phase between the two events where that sensation of acceleration is accentuated and can be experienced, but more to the point, in my approach to astrology, worked with as a tool, worked with as a natural feature in the psychic landscape that can be, kind of used in a way, kind of like you might, you know, use a natural amphitheater to have a concert in, like the Woodstock Festival. That's what was done at the Woodstock Festival. Or perhaps build a bridge where the river is narrow, for example. Astrology works in the same way as a feature of the natural environment, only in the case of astrology, the natural environment tends to be one step back from what is normally visible. It is part of what you might think of as the invisible environment. That is a term from media studies, which is a form of environmental studies, and I believe that astrology is a form of environmental studies. And so we're studying this invisible environment with the help of special tools. And those special tools tell us that these events are happening, and they tell us something about what these events suggest, what their characteristics are. And all eclipses tend to have this one particular characteristic of the sensation of accelerated change and the touch of the hand of fate moving things along in a way. Now, of course, it's not really fate. Fate is a mental construct, but there is that sensation possible that things are fated or karmic or prearranged quite often. And the more aware you are of the whole process of your life and of relating to your environment, and then in the specific case of working with a particular event such as an eclipse or a pair of eclipses, the more you are likely to feel like you can guide your life, like you can use the event to your advantage and use it as a kind of an energy lever and or as a point of resolution to be able to, for example, clarify things, bring things to a conclusion of a certain kind, express something you have not been able to express, make a decision that you have not been able to make, come to an understanding that you perhaps resisted or that seemed to be resisting or evading you. And that is, you know, what you might think of as the more general concept of what an eclipse is about. Now, it is worth mentioning that if you were to go digging in the back of a used bookstore's astrology collection, or for that matter, here in my dining room office, and look through some of the books on my shelf, of which I collect the oldest ones I can and many new ones, you would read things about eclipses that were frightening. People saying things like all of the dark, evil omens that they portend. Study eclipses from the old books for a little while, and you may think, wow, you know, no one has a nice thing to say about eclipses. What is it with that? And you know, what is it with me saying, oh, well, there are these useful natural features in the landscape. What's going on with that? Like, how can that be true? And I think that the difference is predominantly a difference in worldview at the time that books were conceived of and written. Part of it is a matter of worldview as passed down through astrology and not necessarily recognized for being a kind of an heirloom of another era. When you are reading astrology, whoever it might be, it is, I think, vital to recognize something about the era of the ideas that you are reading from, to know something about the author and what their the origins of their, you know, idea framework is, and also to recognize something about the pedigree of those ideas. You know, where, you know, which branch of astrology is this coming from, or has it been filtered through? So in the 1970s, perhaps a bit earlier in the 1960s, a branch of astrology called humanistic astrology began to emerge, and that was a kind of an extension of the more spiritually grounded, perhaps a bit mystical astrology of the late 1800s and early 20th century that was less fatalistic, that began to think of astrology more of as a spiritual tool and less of as some kind of a reading of fate. And this led into a phase of what is currently called psychological astrology. So this is worth a whole discussion and perhaps an interview with someone better versed in the history of astrology than I am. But in this transition into the astrology as mystical tool and as humanistic philosophy, and then as psychological tool in the modern context, and then my use of astrology as an environmental studies tool, the negativity around eclipses gradually began to be filtered out. And it's true that weird things can happen around eclipses, but weird things are happening all the time, and it's important to assess your personal valuation of certain kinds of events from a great deal of experience, and that, I think, ideally would include experience with many other people, such as your friends and your clients, and you know, studying world events and seeing what kinds of things happen. But where we've arrived, more or less, as a kind of body of philosophy, is to think of eclipses as these unusual tools for transition. And often when addressed to us personally, transition and personal transformation. And that leads to the current eclipse, which chart I will include as the graphic for this program. And by the way, you know, the eclipse is not happening immediately. It still seems like it's about, what day is today now? It's March 25th, so it's like about 10 days off. But it's good to have some time to think about these things and some preparation. And as the moon waxes toward full, there's a lot more psychic activity, or we open up to what psychic activity there is. And that makes it a little more challenging to slow down, ponder things, reflect on things. And currently with the moon in a waxing crescent, a bit quieter, it's easier to think about things. But that all said, let's take a look at this eclipse chart and see what the chart has to say for us. And again, I'm looking at a chart for the full moon in the sign Libra. Did I say this was an eclipse in Aries? What I meant was the sun is in Aries, and of course the full moon with the sun in Aries happens in Libra. So this is a total eclipse of the moon in Libra. And what is the most distinctive thing that stands out about this eclipse is that it happens across the Aries-Libra axis, right in the middle of the Aries-Libra axis. And there has been a long-term historical event across the Aries-Libra axis. That means the Uranus-Pluto square, which is happening in Aries and Capricorn. So that, by extension, brings in all of the cardinal signs on the cardinal cross. So the planet Uranus is in Aries, the planet Pluto is in Capricorn, and then by inference, that brings in the point opposite Pluto and the point opposite Uranus. And this eclipse slips into that pattern perfectly because the sun will be in a close conjunction to Uranus right then, and the moon will be in a close opposition to Uranus, and both the sun and the moon will be square Uranus. So the arrangement is what's called a T-square. It's sun, Uranus, opposite the moon, squared by Pluto in a T, all at an exact 90 degree, more or less exact 90 degree angle, exact to within about 1.5 degrees. So it's pretty close. The sun is just a degree from Pluto in that square, and that it will make a conjunction to Uranus. So this is a big lunar eclipse, and it is another one of these kind of, I won't say farewell events associated with the Uranus-Pluto square, but it seems to be synchronous and commemorating what I've been describing as the beginning of the separating phase of the 2012 aspect, that is to say the Uranus-Pluto square, which technically began in June of 2012, but which, as I've said many times, actually really starts showing its influences in 07, 08, 4 or 5 years before that, and now we've reached the separating phase, and that too will go on for most or all of the current decade. So these Uranus-Pluto meetings don't happen very often, and when they do happen, they have far-reaching implications in worldly events and in space and in time. And so the Uranus-Pluto square began to separate. We had the last exact aspect on Monday the 16th, and now the two planets will be growing into a wider and wider square. Eventually, they'll come out of orb, but they're still very close now. And as if to make the point, to emphasize something about this phase of history, to commemorate this moment, we have this rather spectacular lunar eclipse making exact aspects to the Uranus-Pluto square. As if to say, yes, this square is separating, but no, it's not over. And here we're going to show you it's not over by bringing an inner solar system event, which means closer to normal waking consciousness, and have it line up with this outer solar system square, Uranus-Pluto, and we get yet another form of a meeting between the far out, really wild, unnormal, that is to say, unusual level of consciousness type of event, and normal waking consciousness, the sun and the moon. Now, as this happens, there is a whole bunch going on in Aries. The morning of the eclipse, there are an impressive collection of planets in Aries. They include Mercury, which is about to arrive there, the South Node, the Sun, Uranus, and Eris. And Mars, recently in Aries, has moved on to the next sign. That is Taurus. So we have Mars in Taurus for this event. And so on the side of the eclipse where the Sun is, we get this mix of Aries and Taurus, because Mars, of course, is the ruling planet of Aries, and it is right there in the next sign, and so it's kind of carrying the energy of Aries into Taurus. Venus also is in Taurus, and we get a sensation of a kind of deep commitment, involvement, and a sense of physical grounding that is going to be very helpful given the dominant astrology of recent weeks, which has been a lot of Aries and Pisces. That's not that easy to get hold of. Now we're going to have some good, strong Earth energy in this event. Mars in Taurus, Venus in Taurus. But there's still no shortage of Pisces energy. In Pisces, we have the collection I've been talking about, Nessus, Neptune, Chiron, Borysici, a minor planet out by Pluto, and the recent addition of Vesta, planet of service, devotion, dedication, a kind of a, it is a devotion to service that is as if it were a religious devotion, but it is actually deeper than a religious devotion, because the thing about Vesta is that Vesta is not an evangelist. Vesta actually has very little to say. Vesta only has what to do. And so a religious devotion has a lot to say. There's some kind of a message going on. The deeper devotion is about keeping the fire alive, the fire lit. Vesta's symbol is a chevron. The chevron is a container for a fire. So it is a contained fire. And when you think of, you know, the possibilities here, the contained fire we have is the fire of human creativity. In fact, the creativity of all of nature. That includes the core creative dimension of our psyches, which is the dimension of what you might think of as tending to our lives and tending the creative flame at the center of who you are. Now, this is a kind of a big deal to say this to adults, because often adults are fixated on things like obligation or avoiding tending to their creative flame. Big deal, right? To say, but now we're talking about something more primal. We're talking about going back to the very center of who and what you are and taking care of that as a distinctive thing you do, rather than tending to things that are either outside yourself or outside your real sphere of influence. Vesta placed this powerfully, and for a number of reasons, including a square to Saturn, Vesta is placed very powerfully in this chart, is suggesting that the time is now to act on that which you are devoted to. How do you know what you're devoted to? Well, it's partly based on what you do, and partly based on what you say you want to do, And I think especially what you've said you want to do over and over again. The promises that you make yourself are the promises to keep when Vesta is activated this beautifully. Vesta square Saturn, Vesta conjunct Neptune, and will eventually be conjunct Chiron. And right now it's in this group of minor planets, newly discovered planets, which are often distant planets, but Vesta is the closest body in. It's in the main belt of asteroids with about a 4-year orbit, grouped together with, for example, Nessus, well over a century orbit, something like 140 years, Neptune, about 165 years, Chiron, 51 years, and Borysici, about 300 years. So Vesta's the fast mover in the group, and it's making contact point by point with all of these very influential but somewhat difficult to tune into distant outer planets. And in a sense, the message here is about bringing close to you what seems distant, what seems remote, the commitments, the quest, the passion, the devotion, the longing that you might feel. Because Pisces is involved, that longing for connection is inherent in the whole alignment. And Vesta is saying, that's correct. Tend to that flame actively, daily, hourly. Never let that flame go out. Keep that love alive as a conscious act, not as something that you perhaps neglect and come back to, or as something that you obsess over, but where you find that balance of devotion and of interrelation with this deep and true and beautiful attribute of yourself. Now, all of that said, no discussion of Vesta would be complete without the theme of sexual healing. And this is something that is, I believe, inherent in Pisces as a quality of the energy of Pisces, because there's so much about Pisces that is about love and that is about eroticism, just inherently. Think of all the Pisces people you know. We're all kind of romantic and saucy, and sex means a lot where Pisces is in the picture. It brings the meaning to sex and music and art. We all have Pisces in our charts. And right now, we all have Pisces in our charts in a big way, because there is this grouping of six powerful minor planets concentrated in a very focused place in the zodiac, in Pisces. And Vesta's coming through, highlighting, for example, the sexual healing nature of Nessus. And so focusing for a moment on the Nessus-Vesta conjunction, there is something here about really approaching the question of shame and guilt and loss of self-esteem in a way that is meaningful and that comes with authentic devotion to the healing process. Now, one of the most interesting things I have found in my long pondering of the meaning of this concept of sexual healing is that it ultimately comes down to embracing life and embracing pleasure. You might think, what's the big deal with embracing life and embracing pleasure? And the big deal is that when a person truly engages the fact that they're alive and truly engages the transient experience of contact with another person, or the experience of physicality, or the experience of love, or of creating something by oneself, or creating something with someone else, there is the natural inference of transience, and therefore of change, and therefore of death. And here we get a glimpse at the connection between sex and death, and the anxiety about sex that is transferred over to death, and the anxiety about death that is transferred over to sex. They seem to swim around and change places, and literature and the movies love to make big dramas out of this, but sadly, those big dramas tend to miss the point. They exploit the point rather than embrace it, turn it into drama rather than a moment of reflection and pause. And the moment of reflection and pause would say, you're here now. Where you are now is in this place on Earth where there is constant transition going on, where every experience is a transient experience. And to get ourselves out of that, what we tend to do is distract ourselves with things and not be in the actual moment that we are in. Some way to be taken out of the moment. But a big problem with the digital environment is the persistence with which it subtracts people from their physical present environment and their physically present company. Indeed, awareness of one's body and one's senses can be grossly distorted in the digital environment. And that is something to think about. Pisces is all about tuning into all of your senses, including the sense of the feeling body, the intuitive senses, the creative and artistic senses, all these extra senses that are not listed in Aristotle's five ridiculous senses that can be defined by some strict rational definition of what a sense is. There's many senses, and all of those senses are activated with this much Pisces going on. We go way off the normal spectrum of perception, of thought, of sensation, of feeling, of imagination, of desire, once we so fully enter the spectrum of Pisces. Now, I will say this. This subtle dimension of Pisces will be very easy to miss, given the typical fireworks associated with a lunar eclipse, particularly with so much going on in Aries. So this is the environment with the kind of loud, perhaps brash or sudden or unexpected influence that could potentially drown out the environment that is subtler, softer, one step back, not so glamorous. And one of my concerns of the digital environment is the extent to which we are being drawn into this glamour, this world of glamour, this world of extolling the virtues of one's own image by obsessive Facebooking, tweeting, and Instagramming, and whatever all that stuff is, Snapchatting and all this. It is all a lot of me on a certain level of me, and that level is on that of, for the most part, image and glamour. And both the presence of Pisces and the beauty of this lunar eclipse in Libra is saying there is a subtler level of this that can be accessed through the senses, that can be accessed through awareness of relationships and the way in which they change, the beauty of those changes, perhaps the sense of sadness and tragedy and loss around those changes, and that invariably will be experienced in the body, which to me looks like Mars and Venus in Taurus. So this is a subtle event. It exists on many levels. And I would just end with this word of perhaps caution and encouragement at the same time. And the caution is there may be very distracting things which are largely going to be irrelevant. Who knows what they might be? Might be news events. It might be some spectacular movie that you get caught up in. And there is this other level, which is simultaneously one of the sublime and subtle, intuitive, creative, sensory level of Pisces, the solidly, physically in-body level of Taurus, and the embracing the transitions of relationships, i.e. an eclipse in Libra, which to me is an invitation to do eclipses. Well, life. Haha. Caught myself there. In a more conscious and deeper way. To actually be present. And to allow yourself to be invited deeper in, because this eclipse in Libra certainly has this quality of an invitation deeper into the sense that we are here now, we are here together. There are certainly plenty of what you might think of as solitary energy and symbolism in the squares to Pluto, for example. And yet, the main event is in Libra, a sign that is inherently relational with the moon. I would say a body that is inherently relational and perhaps the most human of all of the factors in astrology. All right. That is what I have to say to you today, and I'm glad that I chose to click the record button and come onto the airwaves. Just a little reminder for you, Planet Waves is a community. It is a business. It provides services. All of the services that we provide, whether we charge for them or not, cost money to provide. And when you become a core community member, two things happen. One is you avail yourself of some of the best work that we do at Planet Waves. You get a whole new level of involvement. And the second thing you do is that you support this thing, these people, this thing, Eric Francis, that comes here and speaks to you lovingly every week. You make our lives easier. Every time someone joins Planet Waves, which is our new word for subscriber, you take us one step out of having to be advertising executives, marketing executives. We do that because we have to. We're not really that interested. We'd rather just serve you, give you the astrology that you came here for, and the art and the music. So push that button. Become a core community member. You can do it for $14.97 a month. That goes a long way to make this beautiful programming possible. And you will be amazed what comes back to you. All kinds of good things. Not very many propositions like that on the wild, woolly, and chilly internet. But we are in a warm space at Planet Waves. A warm space where we take care of the world. Speaking of Libra, I'm going to send you out with a song by one of the musicians I absolutely adore and respect with a certain level of reverence that I can't really put into words so easily, but I can tell you that the song that I'm about to play, I once heard played at Rich Stadium, I believe, in Buffalo, New York, when Steve Miller Band opened for the Grateful Dead. And I was right around in the first row, so I had a good view of the stage, and I was listening to the instruments coming through the amplifiers, not the PA system, so I could hear and see and really feel what was going on. And Steve Miller and company came out and played a 15-minute version of this song as the opener for that day's show. And I have to say that it was one of the most astonishing experiences I've ever had in the presence of musicians. And this song always, of course, reminds me of that moment. That is a lot of what music does. And yet, it is always a new experience. So music has that way of being a samskara, thing that evokes latent past impressions, and then, at the same time, something that brings me, anyway, right into the moment. This song needs no introduction. It is called Fly Like an Eagle.
Thank you. slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future.